Today, the sports grant scandal that could bring down a minister. Last week, the Auditor-General delivered a pretty scathing report on a controversial government sports grants program. Since then, story after story has emerged about this program, with allegations that millions of dollars were misused, and some calling it a $100 million slush fund. And the backlash is only getting worse. There's calls for one minister to resign, plus a possible Senate inquiry and class action in the works. So, where exactly did this money go, and who will be held accountable for how it was spent? I'm Laura Murphy-Oates, and this is The Full Story. Where does this story start, Paul?
Well, this all starts with a photo posted on Facebook in February 2019.
Paul Karp is a political reporter at The Guardian.
Georgina Downer is standing in front of a yellow and green sign for the Yankalilla Bowling Club, raising a glass of wine with three old-timers from the club, and stretched between all four of them is a giant novelty-sized check saying Georgina Downer, Liberal for Mayo, Liberal branding in the top right-hand corner, made out to the Yankalilla Bowling Club for the sum of $127,373. And there's a big photo of her own face in the corner.
Can you remind us about who Georgina Downer is? What do we know about her?
So ultimately, I'm not just a name or my dad's daughter or my grandfather's granddaughter.
Georgina Downer is one of the daughters of former Foreign Minister Alexander Downer, Australia's longest foreign minister, serving under John Howard's prime ministership. At the start of 2019, she's the pre-selected Liberal candidate and she's running for the South Australian seat of Mayo, which is currently held by an independent MP, Rebecca Sharkey.
As a local representative, if I'm elected at the by-election in Mayo, to give back to the community and serve them and deliver for them as best as possible.
Okay, so why does she have a giant novelty check with her face on it and what is it for?
So this check actually represents a government grant of taxpayer money in sports funding for this bowling club in the seat of Mayo.
How unusual is this to have a kind of party candidate in the lead up to election who's not a member of parliament presenting large amounts of government money to the public?
Oh, it's very unusual. If it's a government program, you would expect a minister or at the very least an MP to be making an announcement. If something is an election commitment, that's a normal thing for a candidate to announce. But an election commitment is, you know, if you vote for me, then we will give you X, Y, Z. It's not in the form of a cheque being handed over in that very instant. It's very unusual to see a candidate handing out taxpayer money.
And what do people say about that? Were politicians outraged by this?
Yeah, well, Rebecca Sharkey, who is the independent MP, was questioning why her opponent was doing this and why she wasn't invited to the announcement.
Well, this is just a disgrace. What we've seen here is a government that is arrogant.
Labor was outraged by it.
Used taxpayers' money as if it was Liberal and National Party funding.
Said it was completely inappropriate and unacceptable.
And as if that was her money. She wasn't even a member of Parliament.
And so Labor referred the whole matter to the Auditor-General, which is the body that investigates whether, you know, government payments and programs are made within the rules.
And what did Georgina Downer have to say about all this?
Georgina Downer offered a defence of sorts that, she wasn't presenting Commonwealth money because the cheque wasn't legal tender, but it certainly was mocked up to look like, that was the source of the funding.
So her defence was that it was a novelty cheque, basically.
I don't think lottery winners actually hand those over to the bank either, but the point is that it somewhere along the line it represents real money.
And did that defence hold up?
Oh, no. So the Auditor-General agreed with the need to investigate, and it wasn't just the one incident. That was the most high-profile one, but the whole program got investigated as a result.
Okay, so this is government money. Where does it actually come from?
Well, it's from the Community Sport Infrastructure Grant Program, which is supposed to increase participation in sports. The way it works is that clubs such as local bowling or football clubs were able to apply, asking for an amount of money, less than $500,000, to do particular works like upgrade a field or lighting or to build women's change rooms. The application goes to Sports Australia, which is an independent Australian government agency responsible for supporting and investing in sport and physical activity. They went through all the applications, giving them a score out of 100 based on set criteria that they advertised, which were things like increasing participation in sport, you know, particularly for groups such as women.
What happens next?
Well, and in this case, Sports Australia's recommendations went to the sports minister, who still had the final say in who would get funding.
So how big was this program? How much money was actually involved?
So the first round was announced in December 2018. And then what started as a $28 million program was extended two further times to $100 million. And the last two rounds were announced in March and April of 2019. Now, that is just months and in some cases weeks before the election on 18 May 2019.
So there's this small program to fund local sports, but it suddenly triples in size with all this money being given out in the lead up to an election. Were there any flags raised at the time?
Not really, until the novelty check incident with Georgina Downer, which of course led to the whole program being referred to the Auditor General.
Okay, so the Auditor General investigates the program. When did the general public find out the results of that investigation?
So a week ago, in mid-January, the Auditor General released a scathing report. It basically stepped out a process whereby, although Sports Australia was the one grading these projects on, you know, how good they would be for the community and how well they fit the criteria, there was then basically a separate process inside the Sports Minister's office for approving them that, you know, could be completely and was completely divergent from the set of recommendations from Sports Australia. And that allowed a bias to creep in favour of target seats that the government wanted to win at the 2019 election.
So the Auditor General, he pretty much says that some clubs were funded not really based on merit, but to benefit the seats that the coalition was targeting. Is that right?
Yeah, the overall impression was a bias towards marginal seats that the coalition thought they needed to win and were particularly close in the lead up to the 2019 election.
So this is all overseen by the sports minister. Who was that sports minister when these decisions were being made?
Well, sport is the heart of every country community. All the best for the election, Pat.
Thanks very much, Bridget.
Bridget McKenzie was sports minister at the time.
G'day, I'm the federal sports minister and I want to see more Australians getting more active more often. That's why
she's currently moved on to be agriculture minister, but she's quite important. She's the deputy nationals leader as well.
Well, Minister, thank you for coming down to the Sandgate Hawks. This funding that we've announced today, that you've announced today,
So she's in charge of this program. What do we know about why she made the decision she made?
Well, Bridget McKenzie has never really explained what the alternative criteria that she applied that Sport Australia didn't were. So it's very hard to say why some got funding and some didn't. And you can't exclude political bias as a reason then. But there's no suggestion that, you know, just because a particular project had, you know, a link to the Liberal Party that means that that was an unmeritorious one or that all the decisions were politically motivated. But in aggregate, the Auditor General found that there was a bias in the way they were handed out.
We've got 100... We're going to see 21st century AFL facilities, soccer facilities, netball facilities in the future.
What evidence did the Auditor General have that actually points to bias in McKenzie's decision-making process and deciding who gets funding and who doesn't?
Well, the strongest evidence was the way that over time the program was more and more shifted towards what the minister wanted and away from the objective criteria that Sport Australia had assessed them. So in the first round, 41% of the projects that got funding were not those recommended by Sport Australia. But that leapt to 70% in the second round and 73% in the third and final round. So of 684 projects that got the total of $100 million in funding, more than 400 of them were not recommended by Sport Australia.
Okay, so what do we know about these 400 projects that were recommended despite or against the advice of Sport Australia?
Well, Sport Australia has published a list of all the 684 successful projects, but they don't say which the 400 were that were not recommended by Sport Australia but then were given funding by the sport minister. So they're all, the meritorious and the unmeritorious are all mixed in together, making it very hard to scrutinise, you know, whether the Mossman Rowing Club in Tony Abbott's seat of Warringah, for example, that got $500,000.
Absolute pleasure, Tony. And I mean, you just here in the club room, you see the amount of Olympians that have come out of this club since 1948. You see how engaged they are with young people and hear that they've still got rowers well into their 80s.
Whether that was, you know, considered a good project by an independent process or only got on the list because of the minister's intervention.
And that would have been in a marginal electorate as well, is that right?
Well, yes. The seat was eventually won by an independent, so money was pouring into Warringah to try and save Tony Abbott. So we had this $70,000 for Queenscliff Surf Lifesaving Club and $500,000 for the Mossman Rowing Club.
There's been two sports programs funded in Abbott's electorate, in the one electorate.
Oh, yeah. There's about six in his electorate. The Mossman Rowing Club, Northern Beaches Council, Queenscliff Surf Lifesaving Club and Wakehurst Tennis.
Okay. What about some clubs outside of Warringah?
Well, you've got some eye-popping figures. $500,000 is the maximum grant that can be given. And an upmarket tennis club in Perth, the Applecross Tennis Club, with boasting million-dollar views with links to the Liberal Party, including the patron of the club being a state Liberal MP, they got the full $500,000.
Wow.
You had $190,000 to the Tea Tree Gully Golf Club, a picturesque golf course at the foot of the Adelaide Hills, which wanted to upgrade its foyer to attract wedding bookings. And so some of these clubs were in marginal electorates, but not all of them. And we've written stories about other clubs that have close links to coalition politicians. And we did an analysis of those links and found that more than $1 million in sport grants were handed to nine clubs that boast senior coalition ministers or MPs as members or patrons. So that included a tennis club where Josh Frydenberg is an honorary member, an Australian rules football club where Ken Wyatt is the number one ticket holder, and Liberal Senator Sarah Henderson's football and netball club also received funding.
It's not acceptable. That, I mean, to me, that's a corrupt process. They can't tell you that there's this selection criteria and process in play that actually doesn't exist at all.
On the other end of the spectrum, you have Coaldale Football Club, which is between Wollongong and Sydney, and they have been doing a lot of media complaining about the fact that their club, which has 600 registered members and just one field, missed out on funding for their facilities.
It's a waste of the public servants' time assessing all of that. There were thousands of applications, is my understanding, over 2,000 applications. Assessing all of those for no end.
They have enough room for a storage shed or a women's change room, but not both. Basically, they had to choose, you know, how to use that space. They couldn't use it for both. And they have a higher rate of injury at their field because, you know, they need to level the field out. The drainage is poor. Their club is the first club to have games cancelled whenever there's rain because of poor drainage. So it's clearly a club that is in dire need of new facilities.
I don't think that's acceptable. I think that it has to be a transparent process. It's taxpayers' money. It's my money that's gone into the federal government and everyone else in the Illawarra. We have an equal right, along with everybody else, to be assessed on our merits.
Next, the backlash gets bigger. with all these revelations coming out, what's the backlash been for the minister responsible for Bridget McKenzie?
Well, when previous ministers have done this, they got the sack. And this is dodgy as all hell. And if they don't sack her, and if she doesn't quit, then this is just going to be a weeping sore.
There is very broad support for some form of political scrutiny.
There's no doubt that, having looked at what's been said by the auditor, that we have a problem with the way in which the government has dealt with this matter.
And broad support for her to go.
This is outrageous behaviour.
Independent MP Zali Steggall has said it's disgusting. The Greens, Pauline Hanson and Centre Alliance are offering to support a Senate inquiry. Certainly the Greens and Pauline Hanson have suggested she should resign as well. And Labor leader Anthony Albanese has said her position is untenable.
It seems that there is nothing that any minister can do in Scott Morrison's government that warrant them considering their position. Thanks very much.
So, Paul, what has the government said about this?
Bridget McKenzie still hasn't been stood down or sanctioned in any way that I can tell by your government for her role in that $100 million sports grant scandal. Why?
Well, I reject the premise of what you've actually just put forward.
Which is?
Senator McKenzie
What do you mean by that?
Well, basically, you're saying it's a sports grant scandal. These grants that were handed out...
Well, government ministers from the top down, from Scott Morrison to Attorney General Christian Porter to Small Business Minister Michaelia Cash, all of them, when they're asked about it, come out with the defence that...
And I heard the Prime Minister this morning, and I've met with many of these, sporting bodies, that get these grants. I mean, you were talking about grants that were going to assist in the building of facilities so girls could actually get changed
The money went to women's change rooms. Girls didn't need to change in their parents' car or behind a tree.
Because I've got two daughters. I don't want them changing in the car or out the back of the shed. I want them to have access to sporting facilities in our community like the boys do.
And so the program must have been fine.
Does that stack up?
Well, when you consider that the community sports groups that missed out would have needed change rooms as well or other, vital things to ensure participation. No, I mean, Sports Australia thought that there were needier clubs out there that wanted it for that sort of purpose as well. I think the government would, for the moment, rather just wear the criticism and try and divert the conversation away from the political bias towards, oh, isn't it fantastic that, there are more girls' change rooms, in clubs to try and distract from the fact that, some projects were deemed to be more needy but didn't get money.
Okay, and what does Bridget McKenzie say?
The Auditor-General's report is really, really clear.
Bridget McKenzie has said that all projects were eligible and that all rules were followed.
No rules were broken. Every single one of those 684 projects that was funded was eligible. And I would have loved to have nearly $400 million to have funded every single eligible project across the country.
Does that stack up, her defence, that no rules were broken, really, in her guidelines, in what she knew to be her role?
Well, first of all, just because something isn't illegal doesn't mean that it's fair. And I don't think that targeting particular seats passes the pub test, diverting taxpayer money for political gain to try and re-elect the government, overriding independent recommendations with your own decisions. I don't think that that's a great look. But there are rules that may have been broken as well.
What rule could she have broken?
The biggest rule of all, the Constitution.
How does that work?
Okay, so the federal government has a list of things that it has power over in the Commonwealth Constitution, and sport isn't one of them. Now, in a famous constitutional challenge against the chaplaincy case, the High Court basically said that they can't dole out money unless they have a particular power in the Constitution that justifies that program. And academic Anne Toomey from the University of Sydney has said in multiple media appearances this week that there's no sports power. There is something called the nationhood power, but she said she doubted that, resurfacing an oval would constitute a national emergency or something that the states are unable to do. So it's questionable whether the Commonwealth has power to give these grants in the first place.
If that's so, is it possible that this could end up in court, that all of this could be analysed in the High Court?
Well, yes, and there are two law firms that are considering legal challenges, but I think the difficulty is going to be in finding clubs who are prepared to speak up against it and say that they missed out because of the way the program was managed.
So these types of scandals aren't new. You know, we've done a similar story just in the past few months. This scandal does seem to be picking up a lot of momentum, though, with, you know, a potential legal challenge and a Senate inquiry. Do you think that this will create enough pressure to actually change things, to change the way the government works in some fundamental way?
Well, I think an inquiry could find out who the unsuccessful clubs were and who the successful ones that don't deserve the money were. And that can increase the political pain for the government. And anything that increases political pain for the government must, even just at the margins, make it less likely that this sort of thing will keep happening. But that said, the prize of winning an election is always going to be bigger than the political pain of looking self-interested in the way that you spend taxpayer money. So even a very successful inquiry is probably not going to stop this sort of thing from happening again. And Bridget McKenzie has not ruled out using taxpayer funding in precisely the same way. So even if at the height of the controversy, when they're getting the worst headlines about it, they're basically prepared to make it perfectly clear that they'll continue to do it, there's not much hope that things will get better.
Hello, Chris.
Hello.
Welcome to the booth.
Thank you.
Okay, Chris Norse, Guardian reporter. Can you tell me why you're here in the recording booth and in Paul's episode?
Well, it happens that Paul is on a day off, but there has been an extremely significant development in this story.
Which you've been reporting on quite a lot in this past week as well, hey?
Yeah, so I've been working on this story with Paul for quite a long time, so across the details.
A fresh turn tonight in the sports fraud scandal with revelations.
I've just seen there and have been told in my ear about some breaking news. It would appear the whole issue of the sports rorts, I think we're calling them now, and Bridget McKenzie has been referred to Prime Minister and Cabinet.
It's the government what department. What we saw on Wednesday night was that Scott Morrison revealed publicly that he had referred Bridget McKenzie's handling of this sports rorts affair to the Department of Prime Minister and Cabinet for an investigation. And that investigation is going to see whether any of the actions here breached ministerial standards.
Okay, so, you know, there's already been this investigation by the Auditor General, but this is different. What is it going to be looking at?
So it is different. So what's effectively happened here is that the PM has referred everything that the Auditor General found to his department and said, have a look at this and check whether any of it breaches the ministerial standards.
What are some hypothetical breaches of ministerial standards that this story could have brought up?
So one of the things that the standards require is that ministers make decisions and exercise their powers in a disinterested way. So they have to make sure that they don't have a personal interest in something that they're making a decision on.
Is this something that Bridget McKenzie may have done?
Yeah, so what we found out this week through the Sydney Morning Herald and The Age was that McKenzie was a member of a gun club which happened to get a grant through this program. And she was a member of that club when she signed off on the grant going to the club.
How much money?
So it was for $36,000, so not an insignificant amount of money, not the biggest grant in this program. Mm. But what we also know is that McKenzie didn't declare to Parliament that she was a member of this club. And that's something that is required of all MPs. They've got to declare memberships of groups like this. So that puts her in a really tough spot, really, and it's not a great look for the minister who was responsible for this entire program.
Okay, so it looks like she signed off on some funding to her own club, basically, without declaring that she has an interest in it. What does she say about that? Why did she do it?
Yeah, so she said it was unnecessary to declare this gift. And obviously this might have put Mackenzie in a really difficult situation, and it might have been a bit of a miscalculation on her part, because what we know now is that the Prime Minister has hinted that he is referring those specific revelations about Mackenzie to his department for investigation too.
Okay, so if she is found to have breached these standards, what could happen?
Look, the standards themselves are pretty weak. So they're not binding, they're not legally enforceable. It's really up to the discretion of the PM on how he wants to act. There's been some scepticism about the decision to refer it to the Department of Prime Minister and Cabinet, because it's not an independent investigative body. It's the PM's department, and it's headed up by his former chief of staff. So what could happen from here, conceivably, is if Mackenzie is found to have breached the ministerial standards, then the PM could use that as a trigger to make her resign. But we could also just as likely see a finding come back saying Mackenzie has not breached the standards, and then that used as, you know, the rationale for keeping her in her position. We'll just have to wait and see.
There's been some reports from Sky News that Mackenzie might resign of her own accord. What do we know about that?
So we know that she has come out since those reports were first aired and said, there is no way I'm resigning. I'm not going anywhere. I don't believe there's been a breach of the ministerial standards. And, you know, rumours of my demise have been greatly exaggerated. So we'll have to wait and see on that front. Of course, many ministers in similar positions in the past have stayed and stayed even when, you know, they've known all hope is gone. So it's a tough one to tell, but we'll just have to wait and see.
Okay, Chris, thank you.
Thanks so much.
That's it for today. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to subscribe to the show. Just search for Full Story on whatever app you get your podcasts on. We'd also love to hear what you think about the podcast. So if you're on an app that has ratings and reviews, give it a go. Thanks to Paul Karp and Chris Norse for their time. You can read their reporting at theguardian.com. This episode was produced by Joe Koning and Ellen Leibeater, and our executive producers are Miles Martignoni and Gabrielle Jackson. Okay. Catch you Monday.